This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Unwired LA. We're about to speak to Rajit Ghat, who is the director of the WinMEC and at UCLA and the professor there. Welcome to Unwired LA.
Thanks, Mark.
Tell us what WinMEC is.
WinMEC stands for Wireless Internet for the Mobile Enterprise Consortium, which is an activity in UCLA where we do essentially research, education, technology partnership with industry. We do research projects where essentially, you know, students work on maybe some focused problems, where industry participates, industry funds, and, you know, we work essentially collaboratively on projects that are, you know, of interest to sort of the community, the industry, and so forth.
Who all is in the consortium that funds it, and how, at what level is it funded on an annual basis?
So the consortium activities are funded by a variety of companies, and the information is on the website.
What's the URL?
It's http://winmec.ucla.edu.
That's W-I-N-M-E-C.
M-E-C, yeah.
Okay. What's the overall mission? What's WinMEC trying to accomplish?
So WinMEC is trying to really do research, you know, and education projects where industry plays a very active role during the research stage, as well as, you know, when the technology is done in terms of using it and making it available and so on and so forth.
Okay, what kind of issues or projects or technologies does it focus on? Or maybe you should let people know, just who don't already, what RFID is and why it's important and why it's increasingly important.
So, yeah, I mean, we have a variety of different projects that we have done and we're working on. I mean, there's several different projects ongoing. I mean, we did something on, you know, Wi-Fi security. We have been working for a while on wireless multimedia, which involves, you know, delivering different types of multimedia content such as images and 3D graphics to cell phones, and having, you know, collaborative frameworks so that, you know, people with cell phones can sort of work with each other via multimedia content. Then, you know, we have a project on what's called a reconfigurable wireless sensor network, where we are developing an interface that one can attach to a sensor and make a sensor essentially wireless with standard industry standard technology such as you know, Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. And you mentioned RFID. We have a project on RFID middleware where we are developing what's called a middleware layer, that is a layer between hardware components of an RFID system and the end application that utilizes things like databases. What RFID is specifically, you had asked. RFID is stands for radio frequency identification, where the idea here is that you can put a very simple basic radio frequency chip either with or without batteries, and the option without a battery is of a lot of interest to a lot of people, obviously, because you can now put an RFID chip into products, into small things, you know, retail products.
For example, the packages of Viagra that the have just been approved to have RFID tags on them.
Oh, that's I did not know this, but this is it's good to find out.
Yes, two days ago, as a plan to monitor counterfeit drugs.
Yeah. So, for example, what you do is in this particular instance, there's many different applications of RFID. One of them is just, you know, authenticating or validating the genuineness of something. So, at the source, you put in a tag, and then you write to the tag at the source so that nobody else can change that identity. It has a unique identity.
Right. Are you saying these batteryless RFIDs can be queried by equipment that essentially sends them enough energy to respond?
Yes. So the batteryless tags can be queried. You have to be pretty close to them, depending on which technology it is. If it is, you know, high frequency, you have to be, you know, within 1 or 2, 3 feet. If it's ultra high frequency, then, you know, 10 to 20 feet. Typically, I'm just giving you the general ranges.
Right.
And so you have to be pretty close to the tags to read what's in the tags. And there are also batteryless tags to which you can write.
So, in other words, if you've put these on thousands of cereal boxes, essentially they could be printed on them, that when they're queried by the appropriate equipment in some way analogous to the laser readers that read barcodes now, they can both find out who, where they are, what their origins are, and then write to them and say, you are now paid for example, and so that they can then, when they go, people walk out the door, if they're queried again, and the, as they exit, the RFID tags will say, yes, I'm bought and paid for.
Absolutely. I think that if you look at the price of RFID tags, it has been falling steadily, not fast enough, but steadily.
Right.
And I think it's not a question of if, but when RFID tags will be literally printed onto seal boxes and you know, retail products. Of course, you know, I think the world's going to start with the high value products and sort of move,
right,
you know, down.
That's why they're doing it at Viagra and not cereal.
Well, that's a very good example.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So you were involved with this. Just give us a little bit about your background and how you became the expert and researcher in this area.
Well, I don't know if I'm the expert researcher, but I do work
right.
in this area, like a lot of other professors. I joined UCLA, a little over 3 years ago, and I was very interested in, I used to work in industry before becoming a professor.
Right.
So I've always had a lot of interest in working with industry on research development projects. I've seen way too much research that is done and then sort of it doesn't make its way out into the real world, and I have had an interest in trying to get research out into the real world, and that has been one of my passions.
Because essentially a lot of research is done, it's fun for the researchers, but it's not of much use to anybody, and it's not of much value to corporations to commercialize it.
Yeah.
So you're working on solving that problem.
Yeah.
Okay. So how did it come to be that you were appointed to Mayor Hahn's broadband executive panel to participate in this effort to formulate some kind of policy for LA on wireless?
Yeah, I got a call from Morley Winograd,
right?
Who's a professor at USC,
right?
And he said, "Would you be interested?" And I asked him, you know, what this is about and so forth, and he said, "Oh, this is essentially a service to the city of LA," and my take is that here's my take. The mission of our center is wireless internet for the Mobile Enterprise Consortium, and we do wireless stuff.
Right.
And I tend to travel a lot, across the country, outside this country, within this country, within the city of LA, and I have my laptop. I open the laptop. I want to check email, et cetera, et cetera. And do work while I'm waiting,
right,
here and there. And there's a lot of time when we just downtime, and I wish I could use it. And I think this is I think when this happens, when Wi-Fi sort of becomes more and more ubiquitous, I think the productivity of the average person, average human being, is just going to be phenomenal. You know, you're wasting 15 minutes here, 20 minutes here. You can put it to good use.
Right, exactly. What can you tell us that we don't know yet about the organization and structure of this panel? Has it met yet as a group?
Yes, the panel had a meeting yesterday.
Oh, well, what can you tell us about what happened?
Oh, so this was the first meeting, and I guess, you know, we spent, you know, I think this was, a lot of the time. I mean, I guess it was a short meeting.
Did you meet wirelessly online, or did you get together in the same room?
No, we got together in the same room.
Where was the room? Which room? Whose room?
Oh, this was in City Hall.
Okay. Was there a press conference also, or just a meeting?
I guess we just had a meeting. I don't know if they had a press conference after that. I don't know.
You weren't at any press conference. No flashbulbs or reporters.
No. I mean, I guess I didn't see any, TV cameras or anything like that.
Okay.
So I'm assuming.
Right. As far as I can tell, I'm covering this more thoroughly than anybody else. So.
Okay.
how many people were there? Was that the whole membership of the panel? How many people are on the panel? Do you know? Or how many people were there yesterday?
Yeah, I don't have my notes here for the exact number of people,
right,
but I guess there's a there's a press release somewhere that Mayor Mahan's office had done.
Right, okay. So it was everyone from the list there? You don't know, you don't.
Most of the people were there.
Right.
I was just, you know, trying to absorb what was going on.
Right. And what was the basic agenda? What was
yeah.
To get it organized and so on?
Yeah. So the basic agenda was that the first we have to come up with a vision.
Right.
I think so. That was it. I think the most important thing yesterday was really, I think we all got introduced to what was needed, and I think to some extent, you know, for myself, I was trying to understand. This was my first exposure to, LA Mayor's office, and I was trying to sort of understand the bigger picture of, you know, where this is going and
right.
so forth. And
was the mayor there to tell you what his vision was or what he wanted you to do?
No, he was not there, but I think somebody else was there from his office.
Right. And what generally did they tell you they wanted you to do?
Well, the overall, the objective is to look at, if I'll give a little bit of background. If
sure.
you look at Wi-Fi has, you know, a lot of other cities, I would say several other cities in this country have been announcing their plans for Wi-Fi and so on and so forth.
Philadelphia in particular and San Francisco seems to be moving ahead.
Yes, so I think those two cases were also mentioned. And so, you know, then the issue is that, you know, LA is a big city and we should look at Wi-Fi, and I guess my understanding is that you know, that was sort of one of the things that has sort of spurred us along.
Right.
And so we need to, look at that particular, aspect of, you know, what are the other cities, what have they done.
Right.
And you know, there's one of the very important things, from my standpoint, if you look at Wi-Fi, private industry is this is strictly my own perspective.
Right.
And private industry is already, you know, slowly moving forward with Wi-Fi. And then the question here becomes that in this particular instance, the government is interested in Wi-Fi. So from my standpoint, one of the interesting issues that I think we should look at is the whole government-industry partnership.
Okay. All right, there's some specific parts of that I want to talk about, but first I want to talk about the different cities and so on. About 6 months ago or so, Long Beach, just mm-hmm. south of L.A., announced that it was going to put Wi-Fi in part of its downtown commercial area in order to attract more people, and they issued press releases. They said, we want to get people to come here, we want to get businesses to relocate, and apparently their implicit theory was that if they build it, they will come, and if
yeah.
they provide low-cost or free Wi-Fi access, then people who are trying to decide where to locate their business or where to have a coffee in the morning will rush off to Long Beach to do it. Now, I'm making a little light of it, but I'm wondering how important in all of these calculations is the idea that if Philadelphia has, let's just say for the sake of argument, free Wi-Fi throughout all of Philadelphia, or San Francisco does it, is there a serious issue that businesses or people will relocate to these areas, and that because of that, all major metropolitan areas may feel that they need to compete in order to level the playing field and keep their businesses from going away and so on? Is that a serious consideration underlying this whole project, do you think?
That particular issue was not mentioned. Here's the take, right?
Right.
You mentioned, you know, you said that, you know, if you build it, then they will come, right?
Right.
So then I guess, so, you know, you mentioned Long Beach, and of course, you know, I've heard about Long Beach now for a while, and
right.
then you know, the issue comes, you know, so then, you know, for example, in New York also, they had, I guess, in one of the parks, I forget which place, but
right.
they had put Wi-Fi.
Right.
And then, you know, after a while, they said, you know, have people been using the Wi-Fi? We put it in, have people been using it?
Right.
I think that it's too early to tell on that. This is my own view.
Is there some possibility that L.A. could spend a few billion and San Francisco a few billion, Philadelphia? And then someone I interviewed yesterday from SBC says that explained that SBC is now going to spend $4 billion to put in broadband wireless over fiber optic fiber to the home, fiber to the node, and increase bandwidth to 20 to 25 megabits per second. And I'm wondering whether we're headed for another bubble here, is essentially what I'm asking about. I mean, Global Crossing put in a lot of capacity between North America and Asia, and nobody bought it, and they went bankrupt and caused a big disaster. Is there a possibility that this enthusiasm for Wi-Fi and for a fiber to the home and the node is going to lead to another bubble and a whole lot of excess capacity?
I'll tell you what I think.
Right.
I think that at that time there was so much money that there was possibility of having the bubble.
Right.
Right now, I don't think that people are willing to throw money. I don't think that much money is there to throw.
Okay.
And therefore, I think that the chances of bubble are going to be much lower, and I think that the generation of people that learned the lesson then
right.
are still around. We haven't had a 25-year
right.
duration pass. And,
right.
And the other thing I think people are going to look at, I think... people are going to look at phased investments.
Okay.
I think they will find, this is what I think. I mean,
right.
This is just pure, Taipei, the city of Taipei announced that they're going to put Wi-Fi last week.
Right.
Right. And so I think that there will be, I think that most of the places, most cities will come up with a phased plan.
Right.
Because like you said, you're trying to put $1 billion worth of stuff and light it all at once.
Right.
Who's going to foot the bill? That's very difficult.
In fact, the technology of wireless is very conducive to what you're calling phased investment, isn't it? That you can build a cluster in one place and then expand it as demand increases.
Yeah. So like, if a city says, we're going to, based on some hypotheses, we're going to put Wi-Fi here and here and here.
Right.
And then see how it goes, and then if people are not using it much, then you say okay, fine. We've tried. Maybe the world is not ready yet. Maybe there's not enough Wi-Fi based laptops, or whatever the reason is. Maybe we don't have the killer app yet.
Right.
I'll tell you something. Look at voice over IP on the wired internet.
Right.
Look at companies, like Vonage and so forth that are just. I mean, everybody wants to get products, voice over IP product,
right.
and replace the phone system in the enterprises, in their homes, whatever have you, because
right.
really the cost is, incredibly low. And in academia, we've now known that for a while, technologically speaking, we've known that for a very long time with packet switch data as opposed to circuit switch data.
Right, exactly.
But now it's becoming a scalable commercial product. Now, if you look at the Wi-Fi space,
right.
like people are saying, browsing. Well, for me, it might be browsing. Maybe for the, I'm a technology guy. I mean,
right.
our center is about technology, so
right.
maybe I'm not the sort of the average customer. If the average customer may be just interested in making cheap phone calls.
Right. Well, right? That's something. Apparently, cell phones show people are able to make phone
right.
calls practically 24 hours a day.
Well, but then if Wi-Fi is there, maybe the phone call price might even fall further.
Right.
And because the only thing is you will not have the ability to roam while you're making a call, or maybe roaming is difficult or whatever it is, or expensive.
Right.
But if you're within an access point, and if you don't mind just sitting there and making the phone call, maybe there is a cheaper solution than even the cellular technology.
Well, is there a way that RFID could become a major killer app or a partial killer app by essentially creating enough demand to underwrite a lot of the deployment?
Well, you're talking of RFID to underwrite the Wi-Fi deployment?
Yes. Well, and let me throw in another element also
okay.
as part of this. Homeland Security, it seems to me, could make a lot of good use of wireless broadband in any number of different areas, and they've got more money than they can spend at any one moment, I'm sure.
Uh-huh.
What about the relationship there between RFID, for example, all of the millions of packages and products that come into the United States every day through all the ports that need to be secured, if they all had RFID tags on them and there were good systems in place to monitor them, then there's a way in which the demands of Homeland Security to create an infrastructure that could be used for other applications as well would seem to be a compelling synergy that might be taken advantage of, don't you think?
Well, so what you're saying, are you saying to utilize the Wi-Fi infrastructure for applications, for RFID applications?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Am I naive, or is that a plausible approach?
Well, okay, so there are some technical issues.
Right.
In fact, I've thought about similar things, because, you know, Wi-Fi, for example, within UCLA, we already have a Wi-Fi infrastructure.
Right.
And I have thought about, we do RFID research in my lab. So there are two types of RFID. There's the active and the passive.
Right.
The passive is the real cheap one. The active is
right. Is
expensive.
Right, because you have to put a battery and some power in it.
Yeah, power, and then the cost of the, everything is more expensive.
So again, high value targets can have batteries. And,
absolutely.
And low one, no one really cares about cereal boxes too much. But,
yeah.
But people or laptops or products or cars.
Yes.
Might be worth it.
Yeah. So in fact, I was exactly coming to that point.
Okay.
I think that if you have high value products where you don't mind putting, a $30 to $50 tag.
Right.
And the Wi-Fi infrastructure existed.
Right.
Now you have a phenomenal, because you have a phenomenal application where, if you think about, remember I mentioned about the wireless sensor network project in my lab?
Right.
Not only can you monitor where, when, who,
right.
So where are you going?
Right.
But also, what is your status? You may put a sensor node into that product. I mean, I don't know, whatever, maybe, you said, maybe a car or something like
right,
that.
Right, car.
I'm interested in only finding out if my engine is okay or something
right.
like that. So you put one sensor in the engine, okay, so it's going to cost you $50 for the sensor.
Right.
But then you have connected your engine, in a sense, to this massive infrastructure.
Exactly right.
And then somebody, some private enterprise might be willing to pay some money to use that infrastructure.
To find out if you've got the sensor in the engine that's monitoring its function,
mm-hmm.
and then you connect that through Wi-Fi or WiMAX to a larger grid,
right.
then you can essentially, now, but we're close to getting to the privacy issue, though, of course,
yeah, of course.
Because it might be useful from some points of view, and even from the point of view of the users, to be able to know where all the cars are at any one time. In fact, LoJack and similar systems are used in extreme situations to retrieve stolen cars, but obviously on an ongoing basis for traffic control, it might be useful to know where all the cars are and have a computer system to monitor them. On the other hand, do you want the government to know where your car is all the time? So could from your point of view, either technically or legally or experientially, what do we need to start talking about these issues, and will your panel be talking about these issues amongst itself?
I think we should absolutely. In fact, you've thrown a lot of questions into this. I'll try to address them one by one. First, you talked about in terms of privacy of the vehicle and so on and so forth.
Right.
First of all, on a technical basis, I can talk primarily on the technology side.
Right.
On a technical basis, can anyone have access to the information? So let us now look at on the internet.
Right.
When you browse, you use your ISP to browse.
Right.
You probably know this, but your ISP knows exactly every click you made because they're the ones who are sending you there.
Right.
So anytime you get something in life, somebody else has to take you there.
Right.
They will know where you're going.
Right.
So on the internet, there is, from a purely technical standpoint, there is no privacy.
Right.
And
so the issue is who gets to look at that data, especially
exactly.
when it's aggregated.
Exactly. Now, and that's where you start putting it, things like firewalls and this and that.
Right.
And you put security, you put different layers of security. And it's a technology issue. There is a technology issue.
Right.
But technology always, will catch up. For example, let's look at Wi-Fi.
Right.
You go back 2 years, 2.5 years ago, Wi-Fi security was touted as one of the biggest problems that Wi-Fi had.
Right.
But you look at the growth of Wi-Fi, it's phenomenal. And why is that? Because there is a significant value proposition. There's a tremendous productivity gain that people get, convenience and so on and so forth. And the technology folks have been patching the problems.
Right.
So any time you have a technology when it's new, that's going to go through phases and evolutions and so forth, and security is always a piece that will have to be resolved. And look at Wi-Fi. Now, we have Wi-Fi in UCLA. And, you talk to the CIO and so forth about, so there are ways to secure that. You can do end-to-end VPN security, and
right.
now security is done. And similarly, in the RFID space, there are people looking at security. And I think that these security issues, will eventually get resolved.
So in fact, technical means of regulating access to the information are possible.
Yes.
The question is, what kind of legal and social structures that are to be built around that technology will ensure what kind of trade-offs between privacy and aggregate data accessibility, essentially.
Yeah, and you know that's where all the social scientists and the lawyers have to come in and do their thing.
Now, do you think that will the broadband executive panel address these issues, and how important in the scheme of its things will that be?
Absolutely, I think and I hope that these will get addressed. Because imagine if you're providing a Wi-Fi to an entire city, you're blanketing the entire city with Wi-Fi.
Right.
You don't want information of, falling in your information, personal information,
right,
falling into somebody else's hands. You
right.
don't want, for example, if I send a communication from my laptop to an access point, I don't want somebody else in the middle stealing my packets.
Right.
And so I think...
Nor do you want the people in charge of controlling the packets to be able to do things... it's really an expansion of, if you give your email to some site to send you emails, you don't want them to sell it to other people to send you spam.
Yes.
This is that raised to the 100th power,
yes,
of saying, it's possible, you don't want people to know you're banking and you're driving and you're shopping and all of those habits.
Yes.
You don't want that to be known to other people.
Yeah, and so at the end of the day, it's like this, that if a service is available, right,
and
then you're told that, well, if you use it now, anybody in the whole planet can monitor your location, you say, well, do I really need to use it or not, right?
Right.
So at the end of the day, if this is a service being offered to the people,
right,
then we need to ask the people.
Okay, speaking of asking the people, let me ask you one or two other things directly about that.
Yeah.
Do you envision, or have you been told, or what do you know about, whether and how much public input from the 3.8 million people in Los Angeles, in addition to the half a dozen people who are going to be on this panel, are there mechanisms set up for that? Will there be public hearings? Will you be soliciting opinions from other experts, from ordinary people? What's the issue here between the panel and the public?
In short, the answer is yes. For details, I would suggest you talk to the chairman of the panel, Morley Winograd.
I'm hoping to talk to him in the next day or two.
Okay, he's the person.
Okay. What about ownership models? I've sort of been setting up some alternatives here, ranging from the DWP, we now know, supplies the electricity, it supplies the water, those are public utilities, they do it. At the other extreme would be setting up neighborhood councils or individuals as nodes to provide Wi-Fi, connecting to some sort of backbone that the city owns and operates, and almost anywhere in between there. What do you know about the process by which that will be addressed, if it will be addressed, and what's your own personal feeling right now before you go into this about where along the continuum of public ownership versus private ownership is the best way to maximize the utility of the technology that's available in these technologies?
So I'm going to beg out of the question because I'm a technologist.
Right.
I mean, I think that there are other people on the panel that,
okay,
that you should talk to.
So you're there to tell them how to set it up, and other people should be thinking or
so
who's going to own it, who's going to operate, who's going to profit from it, who's going to control it. Those aren't your...
You mentioned WiMAX. I think that's a very, very important issue.
Right.
Because, Wi-Fi is there today.
Right.
But if you think about a phased investment and say, let's say that, you do something 2 years, and WiMAX is coming down.
Right.
And, on a technology basis, this is an incredible opportunity and a technology that has to, we got to look at that very carefully.
Right. I did an interview a few months ago with people from Alvaron who did a test in Georgia.
Okay.
Where they used WiMAX and they were getting essentially 30-mile radius of service.
Right.
And I live in the San Fernando Valley, and the last time I was driving along Mulholland Drive, I looked down just to check, and it's a pretty much a clear shot for 1.4 million people.
Yes.
From that height.
Yes.
And it seems like that could reduce the cost here enormously.
Yeah,
if it was
the whole. I mean, so this is, and so, I think that, you know, if one is looking at Wi-Fi, I think WiMAX is absolutely a candidate to look at very carefully.
Okay. Now, let's assume all of these technical issues and ownership issues are all worked out. I've just been looking at a public notice from the planning department of the city of Los Angeles about a Nextel tower that's going to go up on Ventura Boulevard in Sherman Oaks, and that led me to find out what the issues are now about the dangers, the health dangers of RF radiation, and that took me right to the FCC, and apparently there's some group that just asked them to revise all their standards, and they said, no, we're not going to revise our standards. We take our advice from the IEEE, and if they say it's okay, it's okay. And then those people said, well, IEEE is owned by industry, and it's not fair. And the FCC said, we don't care. And I'm wondering what your view on that is, because if we do all this and we saturate the city or the state or the world with wireless, we're saturating it with radio frequency transmissions, which are much more powerful than those little things going on in individual cell phones. Yeah. Could that stand in the way of deploying all this, or what?
My take is that I mean, as a technical guy and someone who believes, and I look at facts and figures.
Right.
My take is that whichever position someone wants to say, whether it's safe or unsafe, we have to back it up by facts and figures.
Right.
And therefore, you know, studies. If we say we want to do some experiment and we make some claims,
right.
Then to me personally, you know, someone says, well, you know, Wi-Fi is completely safe.
Right.
You know, my take is, I'd like to see the data.
Yes. Well,
and someone says, oh, you know, remember the scare that was there about 2-3 years ago with cell phones?
Yes, I remember that scare. It seems to come back every 6 months.
Yes, yes. See, that's the thing, right? It goes away and comes back. And
well.
And so now my take is, as a person who believes, you know, show me facts and figures, somehow I think we got to find a way because, I mean, look, at the end of the day, I have to be concerned about my safety.
Right.
You know, my daughter uses a cell phone.
Right.
My wife, my own safety is also, I mean, after all, at the end of the day, I'm a user of this technology.
Right. Well, part of the problem.
I have Wi-Fi at home. I'd like to make sure that it's safe.
Well, part of the problem seems to be, though, when these people asked the FCC to do studies to get the facts and figures, the FCC said, no, we're not going to. So I guess my question is, more specifically to you as a member of this panel, do you think that the panel will, or would you support the panel doing in the same way that California is saying, we know more about stem cells, we're going to spend $3 billion on them, we don't care what NIH does, do you think that Los Angeles should say, you know, we're going to do this massive deployment, it'll create more radio frequency than any place that's ever been created, we're going to put a high priority on studying the health effects of it as part of the panel's activities?
Personally, I would I cannot talk for the panel.
Right.
But personally, I would... if we're talking about blanketing city with Wi-Fi,
right.
I would like to personally know what the health effects are
for
myself.
Okay.
And there's one technical reason also why. You know, having one access point in above my house or above my office is okay.
Right.
But the moment you start putting multiple access points, then your location might be in reach of 8 or 9 or 10 access points
The
moment you do the blanketing.
Right.
And, you know, now, then there's a question of how much RF, you know. By the way, you know, RF is there in the air. I mean, even if there's no Wi-Fi, there is some RF in the air.
Right.
So it's not that there's no, you know, we're not living in an RF-free world. I mean, there's always impurities, RF, da-da-da. But then the question is, what is it that, you know, the median human can tolerate and all,
right,
and all
exactly.
the so, yeah, somebody's got to look at that.
Okay, good. That sounds good.
Yeah.
I think that's about it. When's the commission, the panel going to meet next, and do you have an agenda items, and are people going to specialize and have little subcommittees, and if so, what are you going to work on?
So I think for all that, I'll let you, when you talk to Morley, you should ask him. He's the chairman.
Okay.
I don't want to, I have very... I've already sort of told you my end of it. And
now, this is a volunteer arrangement, right? You're not getting, you're getting a per diem or anything?
Nothing.
Nothing. So what's your motivation for participating, and how do you see your previous work and your own work contemporarily will complement each other, how your activity on the panel will complement your professional work otherwise, and what you're going to bring to that, and what it's going to allow you to know better than you did before to bring to your own work?
Oh, yeah. The scale of, you know, think about the largest Wi-Fi deployment that I'm sort of user of is the UCLA Wi-Fi.
Right.
I go to a point, open the laptop, it works. Some places it doesn't work. There are there are what are called dead zones. There are hotspots.
Right.
The scale is so small, and yet the deployment, and there are a lot of there have been a lot of deployment issues right here on campus.
Right.
So, but we learned some interesting lessons. Right.
Right. So, what are the main lessons that you've learned so far? By deploying Wi-Fi on UCLA campus?
Oh, there are a lot of lessons.
All right. What's the biggest one?
Either technically or technically. Well, I mean, so one of the things is that, you know, if you think that, you know, in terms of planning, for example,
right.
location of the access points,
right.
You may think that you need to put them in certain locations, and oftentimes you put them there, and because of hidden metal in the buildings, you
right.
don't know, some rooms have a lot of metal and so forth, then it doesn't get to other points in the building.
Right.
So there's some trial and error needed.
Now, you know, there's a person named Jepson at UCLA. You know him? He's got the Urban Simulation Network or Urban Simulation Project. They're building a three-dimensional visual image of the whole city.
Yes.
If you had that for just UCLA, you'd be able to start, you know, looking where the buildings are that have too much metal in them and so on. Do you think there's a sort of synergy between this establishment of the Wi-Fi network and the urban imaging system so that you'd end up with a GPS and a visual image and a Wi-Fi image of the of all the same areas so you'd be able to do everything more efficiently?
Well, you know, there are Wi-Fi planning software tools,
right.
commercial products that,
right.
that you can use to do, you know, where should I put, you know, so you can take a building and you put the access points and it'll show you how the sort of the building lights up in a sense.
Right. Is that still more of an art or than a science, would you say, that the positioning of the towers and the access points and
well,
so on?
There is basic science that has gone into the development of these software tools.
Right.
But those software tools are not always correct or accurate, but they're an excellent nominal starting point.
Right.
And then on top of that, then you bring in the experienced people to help you make sure that, you know, this is working well and so forth.
Okay. One last question sort of within the whole context. Do you see then that if LA does this, you're pretty much committed, and it seems like, or what's your take on whether the other people are committed? They want to do this. They want to put a Wi-Fi cloud over all of Los Angeles, and they're going to try to figure out how to do it, or do you think it's still a question to be decided by the panel about whether they ought to go ahead and do it? Or how do you at least speak for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't want to talk, you know, for the whole panel. I mean, my take is the following. My take is that a lot of cities are doing it.
Right.
And, you know, and you know, yeah, there's a reason why they're doing it. There are a lot of very smart people out there,
right.
and not only in this country, cities in other countries are doing it.
Right.
And you know, you look at, for example, you look at the wireless infrastructure of a country called Korea.
Right.
You know, they're years ahead of us.
Right.
Right. And I mean, at the end of the day, this is one of those things. Right. Question is, you know, technology is coming. You know, some things are going to happen at some point in time in the future. You know, when do you start looking at it? Right, you start now, next year, 5 years later.
Right, where on the curve is the optimal point to come in?
I'm sorry.
Where on the curve is the optimal point to come in? Essentially.
Yeah, and it's a difficult issue. I mean, you know, are you the avant-garde
right.
folks that you know you're gonna be the first to do it? You know,
right.
Or are you gonna be maybe a half a dozen cities have done it and
right.
you can study? To some extent, it depends on your size. You know, when there's a brand new fancy technology, you know, smaller companies will do it, and then Microsoft comes a little bit later.
Right.
You know, LA is a huge city. You know, LA maybe cannot be the first one to do it. Some
right.
small place like Long Beach can do it.
Right.
But then, you know, can we learn? Can we learn the lessons from these other cities?
Do you think overall this in the relationship between cities that it's going to be more competitive or more cooperative? Because obviously, let's just take something like siting access points. This is something, it seems to me, that if people from Shanghai and Seoul and Los Angeles and Paris and Belgium and Brussels and so on got together on, through the UN or through their own organizations and said, here's what we know, let's share that information mm-hmm. so that we can have the best practices for siting access points
right.
and every other part of
yes.
the process.
Yes.
Or do you think it'll be sort of like a Cold War kind of thing, and Los Angeles and San Francisco will be fighting, and Los Angeles and Paris will be fighting to see who gets the best, you know, because wouldn't it make more sense to have a universal, ubiquitous system that's internationally compatible?
It's a difficult question. It's like saying, you know, there's always, my personal take is, you know, there's always the compete, collaborate.
Right.
Between any two entities.
Right.
And I think it will be the same here.
Okay, so we'll see what happens. All right, it's good to see people knowing all this, doing all this, so I want to thank you, and hopefully we'll be able to keep in touch by either phone or wireless voice over IP soon to talk about this more and get as many people as possible involved to make it as good as possible.
Yep.
Thanks very much.
Sure, thanks, Mark.
Talk to you later.
Yep, bye.
Bye.